a managing director of a large organization, arrived in his office one morning, as he had on thousands of mornings before, sat down at his desk, as he had so often in the past, and began to go through his mail.
Yes, sir. In reply to your letter, that's a usual thing. Dear sir, I'm writing to you to draw your attention. Yes, sir. Deal with this one later. Ra Ko Hotu D Dakota. What's it? Ra Ko Hotu D Dakota Eli Trabobu M Stre Diga Id Stro. What on earth is this all about? Glick Kindi Alib Zvidi Dizu Kladop Ferte Uset. I think I'm just going out of it. Dento Iltre Entveste Killig G. Oh, it's you, fellas. And you, Mr. Cripps. I didn't hear you come.
No, you didn't. We entered rather quietly.
I see. Have you been here long?
Not long.
Well, what's the matter?
We've come to ask your advice, Mr. Gross.
Yes, go on.
Well, it's like this, Mr. Gross. Mr. Cripps here has nowhere to record the incoming mail. What are we to do about it?
Couldn't be more obvious, Mr. Ballas. Let him record the incoming mail in the incoming mail book.
But the incoming mail book is full, isn't it, Mr. Kay?
Is it? So soon?
I'm afraid so.
Good gracious, well, he'll have to get a new one.
Quite, but we've no means to get a new one, have we, Mr. Kay?
What do you mean, no means? As far as I recall, a purchase of 2 incoming mail books was budgeted for this quarter?
It was, but in accordance with the new economy drive, all budgeted expenditures were cut by half, with the result that we were able to purchase only 1 incoming mail book, which is, as I've just mentioned, full. Isn't it, Mr. Kay?
Here, Mr. Cripps. Buy yourself a new one.
We thank you, Mr. Gross. Thank you very much.
Mr. Klig, okay, Apple, E. Boda,
Deptide. Good morning, Mr. Gross.
Good morning, Hannah. Hannah?
Yes, Mr. Gross.
Can you tell me, by any chance, what this is?
Oh, this is a very important office memorandum, Mr. Gross.
Is it? It looks to me rather like a hotchpotch of entirely haphazard groups of letters.
It's written in Pti DP, you see.
In what?
In Pti DP.
In Pti DP? And what is Pti DP, may I ask?
It is a new language which is being introduced into our organization. Now go and get the milk.
There's a new language being introduced into our organization? I don't remember having been informed.
They must have forgotten to tell you. May I go and get the milk?
Who thought it up?
It seems to be a full-scale campaign. Elsie said it's being introduced into their department, too.
Does my deputy realize what's going on?
Mr. Ballash, of course he does. May I go and get the milk?
Run along. Grosto and Zerobid. Kisano. Torti. Oh, are you here again?
We've come to tell you that we've just purchased a brand new incoming mail book. It's lying on Mr. Cooch's desk, isn't it, Mr. Cooch?
Jolly good.
But the Department of Authentication doesn't want to authenticate it.
Why not?
The new book hasn't been registered by the purchasing department on account of its not having been purchased with the department's funds, so legally it doesn't exist, does it, Mr. Cooch?
Say I asked them to authenticate it on my own personal responsibility. My position's solid now. I think I can afford to do that.
Excellent. Would you mind giving it to us in writing? It'll simplify things a great deal.
I would. I don't mind taking risks. In fact, I rather enjoy taking them. But I'm not a gambler. A verbal order will have to do.
Well, then, we must try to talk them into accepting it. Come, Mr. Kay, let's go.
Just a moment, Mr. Ballas.
Yes, Mr. Gross.
Do you know anything about a new language?
I think I've heard about it. I seem to recall Mr. Cubs told me about it some time ago. Didn't you, Mr. Kay?
Do you know who ordered its introduction into our organization?
Who was it, Mr. Kay? Do you know?
Mr. Ballas, you are my deputy, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, then, I didn't order it, so it could only have been you.
One gives so many orders every day, one can't be expected to remember them all.
Don't you realize you ought to consult me on such matters?
We didn't want to bother you with trifles.
Now, what's the purpose of introducing this language?
Apparently, it's just an experiment. It's supposed to make office communications more accurate and introduce precision and order into their terminology. Am I putting it correctly, Mr. Kay?
Did the authorities issue any such directive?
Not directly.
To tell you the truth, I'm far from happy about it.
You would have to find some way to stop the whole thing at once. We don't want to be somebody's guinea pig, do we?
Good morning, Mr. Ballas.
Oh, good morning, Hannah. All right, I'll cancel my order and try to retrieve all the Patai DP texts that have been sent out so far, and I'll have them translated back into ordinary language.
Yes, kindly do that.
We don't want to be somebody's guinea pig, do we?
Exactly.
Mr. K, let's go.
A strange relationship between the two, Hannah, isn't it?
I know a great many particulars about it.
I don't want to hear them. They're both exceptionally good workers. The rest is not my business.
The woman, Shay Lopley...
Thank God I'd nipped this in the bud. Did they seriously think anybody will want to learn this gibberish?
Special Patai DP classes have been set up for all departments.
Indeed? Has anybody joined them?
Everybody except you, Mr. Grant.
Really?
We have to. It was an order.
Whose order?
Mr. Ballash's.
What? He didn't tell me anything about that. Anyway, I fail to see how our staff would be expected to use this Patai DP when most of them couldn't possibly have learnt it yet.
That's why a Patai DP translation centre has been set up.
Hmm?
But it's supposed to be only temporary until everybody has learnt Patai DP. Then it'll become the Patai DP reference centre. May I go get the rolls?
Well, well, a translation centre. What on earth do they find room for it all?
The translation centre is on the first floor, room 6.
That's the accounts department.
The accounts department has been moved to the cellar. May I go and get the roll?
Also on his order?
Yes.
Oh, that's the limit.
May I go and get the roll?
Oh, well, run along. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Gross.
Now what?
Mr. Gross, I'm afraid you'll have to give us the order in writing after all.
I'll do nothing of the sort.
It'll be in your own interest.
What on earth do you mean?
If you'll give it to us in writing, you'll greatly simplify the work of our clerical staff. They won't have to fill out a special voucher to go with each incoming letter, you see. And in view of the rumours which have lately been circulating among them, it would certainly be a good tactical move on your part. Am I not right, Mr. Kay?
Mm-hmm. What rumours?
Oh, about that unfortunate rubber stamp.
A rubber stamp? What rubber stamp?
Apparently during the last inventory, it developed that you're in the habit of taking the bank endorsement stamp home for your children to play with.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Of course I've taken that particular rubber stamp home a few times, but not as a plaything. There are nights when I have to take my work home in order to get it all done.
You don't have to explain it to us, Mr. Gross, but you know people.
And you think this bit of paper you want would smooth things over?
I'll guarantee you that.
All right, then, as far as I'm concerned. Have it typed and I'll sign it.
Here you are, Mr. Gross.
Huh? Oh. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. We thank you very much in the name of the whole organization.
Mr. Ballas.
Yes, Mr. Gross.
Have you cancelled the introduction of Tai DP?
Not yet.
Why not?
Well, you see, we've been waiting for the right moment. There doesn't seem to be the right sort of atmosphere among the authorities for this move just now. We wouldn't like it to be used against us in any way, would we, Mr. Kay?
Nah.
That's just an excuse.
Mr. Gross, you don't believe us and we're hurt.
You've bypassed me. You moved the accounts department to the cellar.
That's only half the truth.
What's the other half?
That I've ordered a ventilator to be installed in the cellar next year. Mr. K, speak up. Didn't I give such an order?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about the light?
All arranged, Mr. Gross.
How, may I ask?
The temporary accountant has brought a candle from her home.
Let's hope so.
Mr. K, speak up. She did bring a candle, didn't she? Mr. K doesn't seem to know about it, but she did. You can go and see for yourself.
Be that as it may, you bypass me. You organized Patai DP classes, you set up a Patai DP translation center, and you made the study of Patai DP obligatory for all the staff members.
Outside their working hours.
That's beside the point.
Mr. Gross, I fully agree that I may not bypass you in anything that concerns the activity of our staff during their working hours. But as for anything outside those hours, I believe I can do as I please.
I don't quite know what answer to give you at this moment, but I'm sure there's a fitting answer somewhere.
Perhaps there is, perhaps there isn't. In any case, at this point, we're not concerned with anything but the good of our organization. Are we, Mr. K?
Ah.
Naturally, we hold the same critical attitude towards Patai DP that you do, Mr. Gross. Only we think that if, before the inevitable collapse of the whole campaign, we can manifest a certain limited initiative, it'll be of great help to our whole organization. Who knows, this very initiative may become the basis on which we might be granted trolley which we have been trying to get for so long. Imagine that our staff would no longer have to travel all that way to get their cup of tea.
All right, it's quite possible in this way that we might indeed get the trolley. This, however, in no way changes the fact that you bypassed me a number of times, and that lately you've been taking far too many decisions on your own authority.
I don't know what you mean. How can you say such a thing, when we've just been consulting you about such a trifle as a new incoming mail book? You're not being fair to us, Mr. Gross. You're not at all fair.
Mr. Ballash, let me make a suggestion.
Yes?
Let's be quite honest with each other for a while, shall we? It will simplify our situation a great deal and speed up the clarification of our points of view.
Shall we accept, Mr. Kay? I accept.
Why did you say that you hold a critical attitude towards PTIDP and that you're only interested in the trolley when, in fact, you believe in PTIDP and do everything you can to get it quickly introduced?
Matter of tactics.
A little short-sighted?
I wouldn't say so.
It never occurred to you that sooner or later I'd see through your tactics?
We knew you'd create obstacles, and therefore we arranged it so you couldn't see what we were after until we were strong enough to surmount your obstacles. There's nothing you can do to stop us now. The overwhelming majority of our staff stands resolutely behind us because they know that only Patai DP can place their work on a truly scientific basis. Is that so, Mr. Kay?
Only you're forgetting that it is I who bear the full responsibility for our organization. I who have been entrusted with it.
You cannot ignore the attitude of the masses. The whole organization is seething and waiting for your word.
I won't let a mob dictate to me what to do.
You call it a mob. We call it the masses.
You call it the masses, but it is a mob. I'm a humanist. And my concept of directing this organization derives from the idea that every single member of the staff is human and must become more and more human. I'm not against precision in official communications, but I'm for it only insofar as it humanizes man. In accordance with this, my innermost conviction, I can never agree to the introduction of PTIDP into our organization.
Are you prepared to risk an open conflict?
I place the struggle for the victory of reason and of moral values above a peace bought by their loss.
What do you say to this, Mr. Kay?
I suggest to you that we all forget what had just happened between us and that we part in peace before I'm forced to take the whole matter seriously.
I've got those rolls at last.
It seems, Mr. Kay, he's not yet ripe for realistic discussion. We've overrated him. Never mind, let's give him, what do you say, an hour? Time is on our side. An hour from now, we'll no longer be handling him with kid gloves. The patience of the masses is great, but it is not infinite. He'll be sorry. Let's go.
Unheard of. Hannah?
Yes, Mr. Gross?
Do you know PTIDP?
No, I don't.
Then how did you know that this was an official memorandum?
Well, they say that in the first stage, PTIDP was used only for important official memoranda, and that these are now being received by some of the staff.
What are these memos about?
They're supposed to inform the recipients about decisions based on the findings of the last inventory in their department.
Indeed? What sort of decisions?
All sorts, it seems. Very positive and very negative ones.
Damn that rubber stamp. Where on earth did you learn all this?
Oh, in the dairy shop this morning.
Oh. Where did you say the translation center is?
First floor, room 6. To get to it, one must go through the PTIDP classroom.
I see, the former accounts department. Well, I'm off to lunch.
You like it, Mr. Gross? They've got goose in the canteen today.
As Mr. Gross went on his way through endless corridors, he also had to cross a room where a group of employees were spending their lunch hour listening to a lecture. Mr. Gross stopped.
And now, let us turn briefly to some of the basic principles of PTIDP. The natural languages originated, as we know, spontaneously, uncontrollably, in other words, unscientifically, and their structure is thus, in a certain sense, dilettantish. As far as official communications are concerned, the most serious deficiency of the natural languages is their utter unreliability, which results from the fact that their basic structural units, words, are highly equivocal and interchangeable. You all know that in a natural language it is often enough to exchange one letter for another. Goat, boat, love, dove. Or simply remove one letter, fox, ox. And the whole meaning of the word is thus changed. And then there are all the homonyms. Now consider what terrible mischief can be caused in inter-office communications. when two words with entirely different meanings are spelled exactly the same way. P-O-S-S-U-M. Possum. Possum. The first designating an American small arboreal or aquatic nocturnal marsupial mammal with thumbed hind foot. The second, the Latin equivalent of I am able. Such a thing is quite unthinkable in Ptidipi. The significant aim of Ptidipi is to guarantee to every statement, by purposefully limiting all similarities between individual words, a degree of precision, reliability, and lack of equivocation quite unattainable in any natural language. To achieve this, Ptidipi makes use of the following postulation. If similarity between any two words is to be minimized, the words must be formed by the least probable combination of letters. This means that the creation of words must be based on such principles as would lead to the greatest possible redundancy of language. You see, the greater the redundancy of a language, the more reliable it is, because the smaller is the possibility that by changing one letter, by an oversight or a typing error, the meaning of the text could be altered. Now, how does, in fact, Ptidipi achieve its high redundancy? By a consistent use of the so-called principle of a 60% dissimilarity, which means that any Ptidipi word must differ by at least 60% of its letters from any other Ptidipi word of the same length. Thus, for example, out of all the possible five-letter combinations of the 26 letters of our alphabet, and these are 11,881,376, only 432 combinations can be found which differ from each other by three letters, i.e. by 60% of the total. Now, from these 432 combinations, only 17 fulfill the other requirements as well, and thus have become Ptidipi words. Hence, it is clear that in Ptidipi there often occur words which are very long indeed.
Sir?
Yes?
Would you please tell us which is the longest word in Ptidipi?
Certainly. It is the word meaning a wombat, which has 319 letters. But let us proceed. Naturally, this raises the question of how Ptidipi solves the problem of manageability and pronounceability of such long words. Well, quite simply, inside these words, the letters are interspersed with occasional gaps, so that a word may consist of a greater or smaller number of so-called sub-words. But at the same time, the length of a word, as indeed everything in Ptidipi, is not left to chance. You see, the vocabulary of Ptidipi is built according to an entirely logical principle. The more common the meaning, the shorter the word. Thus, for example, the most commonly used term so far known, that is the term whatever, is rendered in Ptidipi by the word go. Now, as you can see, it is a word consisting of only two letters. There exists, however, an even shorter word. That is, but this word does not yet carry any meaning. Now, I wonder if any of you can tell me why. Well, Mr. Carouse?
It's being held in reserve in case science should discover a term even more commonly used than the term whatever.
Correct, Mr. Carouse. You get an A.
Joseph Gross continued on his way, somewhat shaken by what he had heard, towards the translation center.
Good morning.
Oh, morning.
I dropped in to get acquainted with the activities of the translation center. I'm the managing director.
Oh, so you're the managing director.
Yes, Joseph Gross.
Oh, I did enjoy that feat. I'm very glad to meet you. Sorry I didn't recognize you. I've been here only a very short time, and so I still haven't met everybody. My name's Mashat, head of the Translation Center. Do sit down.
Thank you.
Everything here is still, so to speak, at the the mappy stage.
I understand.
We're still grappling with a great many teething troubles.
That's clear enough.
Oh, it's no easy matter, you know.
No, quite.
Now, tell me, what exactly would you like to find out?
Well, I should like to see how you've organized the process of making translations. Do you do them while one waits?
Oh, we'll make a translation from Ptidipi while you wait for any member of our organization who is a citizen of our country and has an authorization to have a Ptidipi text translated.
Does one need a special authorization?
Morning, Master.
Here, have you had that goose for lunch today?
Oh, hello, Kuntz. What? Did you say goose?
Yeah, that's what the chaps in the secretariat said.
Oh.
I'll pick you up on the way to the canteen, right?
Right. The sooner the better.
Goose. That's my favorite dish. Now, what were we talking about?
You were saying that one needs an authorization to get a translation made.
Oh, right. Well, look here. We, the staff, do use TidyP, but we are no experts. Let's face it, we are no linguists, are we? No. So, naturally, the exploitation and development of TidyP cannot be left in our hands alone. If it were, it might lead to unwelcome spontaneity, and TidyP might quite easily change under our very noses into a normal, natural language, and that loses its whole purpose. You must excuse me.
Hey, just one moment.
Was Alex here?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, you're not part of this shop, love.
On the contrary, I'm the managing director.
Oh, are you, love? Well, you must do something about this tea, Charlie. I mean it. It's a bloody shame to see our girls traipse miles for a cup of tea. It really is. Does anyone think about people in this shop?
And who, may I ask, are you?
I'm the chairman. But you can call me Nellie.
The chairman of what, if you'll forgive my asking?
Of what? I don't know of what just yet. As a matter of fact, we're having a meeting about this very thing this afternoon, but I'm already so bloody busy I don't know which way to turn. See you later, chum.
Oh, you're still here. Sorry, I had to rush out. Yeah, the call of nature. You don't like goose.
I do.
Oh.
You were saying that TidyP cannot be left only in your hands.
Right. And that's why every department which starts to introduce TidyP is assigned a special methodician, a so-called TidyPist, who, being a specialist, is supposed to ensure that TidyP gets used correctly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Maria, our secretary.
Now, what was I talking about?
Oh, yes. Our TidyPist fulfills this task, above all, by issuing for every translation a special authorization, which enables him to record all outgoing translations from TidyP. This enables him to get all the necessary material for various statistics, on the basis of which he then directs the use of TidyP.
So that, if I understood you correctly, you will give a translation only to those staff members who can produce an authorization from your TidyPist.
Right.
Hey, are you ready, Martha?
Maria, where's my cutlery?
Well, who is your TidyPist?
Now, have they been washed up?
Of course they have.
What did you say? Who is your TidyPist?
Dr. Kuntz here. Oh, so glad to meet you. I'm Joseph Gross, the managing director.
Oh, how do you know? My name is Alec Kuntz. I'm the graduate TidyPist. My degree is like a doctorate, you know.
I'd like a word with you, Dr. Kuntz.
Of course, old man. Are you going to ask for breath?
Well, I'm terribly sorry, but we really must go and have our lunch now. Shouldn't want to miss it.
No, I prefer leg, actually.
Have you a cigarette, by any chance?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't smoke.
What's in that box?
Cigars.
Well, may I take one?
Oh, no. They belong to Mr. Mashat. He's counted them. He'd be very angry if you did.
What are you typing?
Reports.
Oh, I see.
Gross didn't want to leave the translation center now that at last he had established contact with it. So he waited for the return of Mr. Mashat and Dr. Kuntz.
Oh, that was delicious. The way it was cooked, straight through, and the crispy skin.
Well, I don't know. You know, I think it was better than last.
Oh, no. Last time it wasn't juicy enough. The very best was the time before last.
Dr. Kuntz?
Maria?
Yes?
Would you go and ask Mr. Langer if he's going to have his lunch today? If he isn't, ask if he'd mind sending me his voucher.
Yes, Mr. Mashat.
Dr. Kuntz?
Not bad, that girl, huh? Rather pleasant. Sexy little chick, isn't she?
Dr. Kuntz?
Sexy? Oh, come on.
Yes? I understand you can authorize the making of a translation from TidyP for our staff. Am I right?
Yes, I do that for any member of the staff who brings me his documents.
His documents? What do you mean? What sort of documents?
No personal registration.
Wouldn't it be enough if a chap just told you himself everything you want to know about him?
Yes, but that wouldn't guarantee that everything was hoot-put.
I beg your pardon?
Hoot-put. Quite exact.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mashat, but it appears that Mr. Langer will definitely be eating his lunch today.
Oh.
pity.
Well, now, all the particulars concerning each employee have long been recorded with the greatest precision and without any possible subjective zest or heat. Point of view.
And I understand. I mean, I've a completely put zest or heat of it.
Zest or heat it. You've forgotten that every noun preceded by the adjective hutput takes on the suffix tet.
Or tete.
Or tete, quite. Many people make this mistake, even Mr. Wasserman in one of his letters.
Excuse me, you were speaking about the advantages of the personal registration documents.
Oh, yes. Well, now, the personal registration documents often record things which even the particular employee doesn't know about himself. Idnik.
Well, to sum up, you'll authorize a translation only for those members of the staff who can produce their documents.
Uh-huh.
All right. Where does one get them?
Hello, everybody.
Listen. You know whose birthday it is? Eddie Clements.
No, there's
a flu going on for him next door, so drop everything and come along. Hey, Maria.
Yes, Miss Helen.
It seems the grocer's got limes. Would you mind running over and getting me, eh?
Right away, Miss Helen.
What are they drinking?
Vodka.
Did you hear that, Marshad? Come on, let's hurry.
You haven't told me yet where one gets those documents.
Why, right here, from our chairman, from Nelly, of course. Oh, you will excuse me, won't you?
Come on, Coots. Miss Helen.
Yeah, what?
I'd like a word with you.
Oh, later, chum, you'll have to wait.
Yeah?
Where else?
You mean you don't mind leaving here alone, with all the classified material and all that?
You won't be alone. There's a chink in the wall, love. You're being watched by our staff watcher.
Good gracious, through a chink?
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be much good if he was actually in here. That way he'd be able to watch only one office, wouldn't he? Now, this way he can watch five of them at a time. You see, his cubicle is surrounded by offices, and each is furnished with an observation chink. So, all he's got to do is to walk at random, match from one to the other, and peer.
Interesting idea.
Yeah, isn't it, love? And it's my idea, too. Now, my point was to stop visitors from having to hang about in the hall when the office is empty. Well, it's a bloody nuisance, isn't it? I mean, even in these piddling details, one must be thinking of the good of the people. Oh, well, see you later, chum.
I'll wait, chum. Let's see if I can find a staff watcher.
Don't bother. The chink is well disguised.
I should say it is. One might make use of this idea in other departments as well.
Oh, bother.
What's the matter?
Forgot my purse.
Miss?
Yes?
Do you know Ptai-DP?
A bit.
Can you translate it?
Oh, I'm strictly forbidden to make any translations before I pass my exam.
But on my authority, you might try to make a translation, mightn't you? It doesn't have to be perfect, you know.
Oh, you wouldn't understand. It's impossible, that's all.
What's your name?
Maria.
Maria, a pretty name.
Oh, do you like it?
I do. Maria, just for once. Nobody will know about it.
Oh, Mr. Gross, somebody might walk in any minute. Please be reasonable.
Oh, go on, my dear.
What about the staff watcher?
Well, you could whisper the translation to me.
Oh, the limes will soon be sold out, and Miss Helen will be angrier. Bye.
Back in his office, Gross found Mr. Balash and his inseparable companion, Ferdinand Cook, waiting for him.
Well, Mr. Gross.
Well, Mr. Ballard?
The hour has passed. Are you now prepared to be more reasonable?
Certainly not.
As you may have noticed, the introduction of Ptai-DP into our organization proceeds successfully. What do you propose to do about it?
Put a stop to it.
How do you propose to do that?
I issue an order that the introduction of Ptai-DP be stopped and its use cancelled.
You cannot.
Why not?
You never issued any order for its introduction and use, so you're in no position to stop and cancel anything at all.
Well, then you will do it.
I haven't issued any such order either, have I, Mr. Kay?
What do you mean?
It was just a verbal directive based on an assurance that you'd validate it by a supplementary order.
Well, then I'll simply not give any supplementary order.
The introduction of Ptai-DP is in full swing, and it will naturally go on even without it.
In that case, I'll have to report the whole matter to the authorities.
Did you hear that, Mr. Kay? He doesn't know that the authorities have taken a great fancy to Ptai-DP.
If they're so much in favor of Ptai-DP, why haven't they made its use obligatory in all organizations?
They like to play it safe. If Ptai-DP succeeds, they'll have plenty of time to take the credit for it. If it fails, they'll be able to dissociate themselves from it and blame the department.
I hope you don't expect me to be a traitor to my beliefs.
I do.
How dare you?
Do you see this book? Not long ago, it was improperly authenticated by your order, although it had not been registered by the purchasing department, and thus was your own property. Do you know what that constitutes? Abuse of authority.
Good God, don't you make yourself sick?
Do we make ourselves sick, Mr. Kay?
Nah.
Of course we don't. When the good of man is at stake, nothing will make us sick.
But you yourself got me to sign that authentication.
I did. I don't seem to remember.
By your hints about the rumors concerning that darn rubber stamp.
I wouldn't bring that up if I were you.
Why not?
Because it's no extenuating circumstance at all. Just the reverse, in fact.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't you? Well, look here. If it weren't for the affair of the rubber stamp, you might have claimed that you signed the authentication of this book, moved by a sincere desire to help our clerical staff, which, of course, wouldn't have excused your conduct, but would at least have explained it somewhat on humanitarian grounds. While if you do bring up this motive now, you'll be admitting thereby that you signed it moved merely by petty cowardice so as to silence legitimate inquiries into the circumstances of the affair of the rubber stamp. Do you follow me? Now look, if on the other hand you hadn't signed it, you might have pretended that you were indeed taking the rubber stamp home for reasons of work, but your signature proves that you were clearly aware of your guilt. As you see, both your errors are intertwined in such an original way that the one greatly multiplies the other.
All right, I'll resign.
But we don't want you to.
Well, what do you want me to do?
Sign the supplementary order for the introduction and the use of Petai DP in our organization.
Are you sure that Petai DP will really make office communications more precise?
I'm glad our discussion is at last reaching a realistic level. Look here. You yourself know best how many misunderstandings, suspected innuendos, injustices, and injuries can be contained in one single sentence of a natural language. In fact, a natural language endows many more or less precise terms, such as, example, the term colored, with so many wrong, let's say emotional, overtones that they can entirely distort the innocent and eminently human content of these terms. Now, tell me sincerely, has the word mutarex any such overtones for you? It hasn't, has it? You see, it is a paradox, but it is precisely the apparent inhumanity of an artificial language which guarantees its truly human function. After the TIDP comes into use, no one will ever again have the impression that he's being injured, when in fact he's being helped, and thus everybody will be much happier.
You convince me. Have the supplementary order for the introduction of the TIDP in our organization typed, and bring it to me for signature.
Mr. Gross, we're overjoyed that you've grasped the demands of the times. We're looking forward to our further work in the organization under your expert and enlightened leadership. Here is the typed order you request. Well, that's that. I believe that from now on we'll be working very closely together.
We'll have to. Without your help, it'd probably be rather hard for me to find my bearings in the new situation. Perhaps at the beginning we shan't be able to avoid directing the organization, so to speak, hand in hand.
I have a better idea. What about me being the director and you my deputy? Won't that make things much easier?
But you said, didn't you, that you were looking forward to working under my expert and enlightened leadership?
You'll be able to use your expertise and enlightenment just as well as a deputy. I'll go and get my things, while you, Mr. Gross, will kindly move out of my desk.
As you wish, Mr. Fellows.
Mr. Kay, let's go.
Things do seem to be moving rather fast.
Mr. Gross.
Well, there's nothing else I could do. An open conflict would have meant that I'd be finished. This way, as deputy director, I can at least salvage this and that.
Mr. Gross.
Anyway, who knows, maybe this TIDP will turn out to be a good thing after all. If we grasp the reins firmly and with intelligence...
Mr. Gross.
What is it?
May I go and get my lunch?
So we'll run along. Why can't I be a little boy again? I do everything differently from the beginning.
And so, Joseph Gross picked up his personal belongings to take them along to his new office. But on the way, he couldn't resist having another try to get his memorandum translated. And so he went to the Pataidipi classroom once again.
Historically, the natural languages originated in all probability through the development of the inarticulate shrieks by which a primitive creature expressed his basic reactions to the surrounding world. The very oldest group of words is thus the interjections. At the same time, the interjections form an unusually easy part of Pataidipi, which is quite obvious, as their frequency in inter-office communications is rather limited. That is why the interjections will form the first few lessons of your curriculum. I'd like to demonstrate to you, through the Pataidipi renderings of the interjection boom, how rich and precise is Pataidipi, even in this marginal sphere.
Sir?
What is it?
I do hate to interrupt you, but I happen to have with me a little Pataidipi text, and I was wondering if, just as an example, you know, it might not be a good thing to acquaint our colleagues here with the actual shape of Pataidipi. Perhaps if you read it aloud and then possibly translated it, it might be of interest to the class.
As regards a sample of an actual Pataidipi text, I've prepared my own authorized specimen. Mm-hmm. However, for the sake of variety, I'm quite prepared to read your text as well. That is, provided you can show that your interest in Pataidipi is vital and you're not just trying to interfere with the class. You may sit down. Now, where were we? The interjection boo is used in the daily routine of an office, a company, a large organization, when one employee wants to sham ambush another. Now, in those cases where the endangerment of an employee who is in full view and quite unprepared for the impending peril is being shammed by an employee who is himself hidden, boo is rendered by gedeinrelom. Now, the word ofontati is used in substantially the same situation when, however, the imperial employee is aware of the danger. Ed gind ai trojados is used when an employee who has not taken the precaution all the time, all the trouble to hide, wants to sham ambush another employee who is also in full view in case it is meant as a joke. Now, egg jet kutz is used in substantially the same situation when, however, it is made in earnest. Aisisti er tordai is used by a superior wishing to test out the vigilance of a subordinate. Aixat sarora nudge is used, on the contrary, by the subordinate towards a superior, but only on the days especially appointed for the purpose. And now, let me see if you've been paying attention. Who can tell us how one says boo in Pataidipi when a hidden employee wants to sham ambush another employee who is in full view and quite unprepared for danger? Mr. Klaus?
Gedeinrelom.
Correct. And when the imperial employee is aware of the danger, are you there?
Danger menacing an employee who's in full view?
Yes.
Who is aware of the danger?
Yes.
And the perpetrator is hidden?
Yes.
Ah, yes. I see. Well, in that case, one says, damn it, it was the tip of my tongue.
Now, Mr. Klaus, do you know?
Ofontati.
There you are. You see how easy it is? Well, let's take another case, shall we? Now, for example, how would a superior say boo when he wishes to test out the vigilance of a subordinate?
A superior?
Yes.
The vigilance of a subordinate?
Yes.
I say, I think I know this one.
You do? Well, then, tell us.
We're translating the interjection boo, aren't we?
Yes.
I'm sure I know it. Only it sort of slipped my mind.
Well, Mr. Callas?
I sisti et tordai.
Correct, Mr. Callas. Well, shall we try once more? Third time never fails, eh? Well, let's see if you can tell us, for example, how does an employee who has not taken the precaution or the time or the trouble to hide say boo if he wants to sham ambush another employee who is also in full view when it is meant in earnest?
I'm afraid I don't seem to know.
Let me help you. Egg jet.
Yes, I do remember now. Egg jet.
Wrong. Mr. Callas, would you mind telling us?
Egg jet could.
Correct. Egg jet doesn't mean anything at all. Those are only two sub-words of the word egg jet could.
The third sub-word escaped me.
Unfortunately, also the first two sub-words escaped you. just as all the other Ptidipi words which I was trying to teach you only a moment ago. Mm. And when one considers that the interjections are the easiest part of Ptidipi, and that my requirements have indeed been minimal, one cannot avoid concluding that in your case, it is not merely a matter of average inattentiveness or negligence, but of that particular inability to learn any Ptidipi whatsoever, which stems from a profound and well-disguised doubt in its very sense. Under these circumstances, I don't see why I should oblige precisely you by reading aloud and, what's more, translating an unauthorized text. Chozuk, puzuk, but.
Goodness. So much fuss about three little words.
Let us proceed. Mr. Kalas, can you tell us how a subordinate says boo in Ptidipi on the days especially appointed for this purpose?
I accept the Zola nudge.
Correct, Mr. Kalas. You get an A.
Clearly, after this defeat, Mr. Gross couldn't ask the instructor to translate his memorandum. So wearily, he trudged on to the translation center.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Here are the lines, Miss Helen.
Oh, would you mind putting them down by the curtain rack? There's a good girl.
All right.
Is Miss Helen next door?
Yes, they're celebrating Mr. Clement's birthday.
Do you think she'd mind coming here for a moment?
I don't think so. Mr. Gross?
Yes?
You're no longer the managing director.
I'm his deputy now.
Oh. Forgive me for asking. What happened?
Oh, well, we exchanged jobs, Mr. Ballash and I.
Well, deputy director is also a very responsible position.
It is, isn't it? As a matter of fact, to a certain extent, it's even more responsible than the directors. I can remember, for instance, when I was a director, my deputy often solved some of the most important problems for me. Will Miss Helen come?
Oh, you'll have to wait a little, I'm afraid.
Hey, Maria, come here a moment, will you?
Yes, Miss Helen.
Mr. Watcher?
What is it?
Aren't you celebrating?
I'm following the party through the kink.
Does it look like a late one?
They've finished the vodka.
Oh, have they?
Oh, I bet she was shy.
To start with, but then...
Then what?
Well, you know what.
Oh, come off it. I bet you made up that part about Kachaji Bull.
Oh, absolutely not. No literal truth. Down to the last letter.
No, come off it, old boy.
Mind you, if it hadn't been for Kodrufa Bzalgaft, we'd have certainly l'ouvre de Baroque.
No, but does she act?
Well, I'm telling you, she's a wild and cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women.
How old is she?
16.
Oh, I prefer them a teeny weensy bit younger.
Come on, everybody, let's have some coffee. Yeah,
that's the thought. Where's Maria?
Well, our sexy little chick. Mr. Gross might know.
I?
Oh, don't try to deny it.
You lust after her. I beg your pardon?
You called her my dear. The staff watcher heard you.
Why must you spill the beans, Alex? Every time...
Listen, why don't you shut up and warn?
No, friends.
Maria!
Maria! Maria! Maria!
Oh, don't leave her alone, love. She's ironing my slip. I'll make the coffee, eh?
I say, what about a cigar with the coffee?
That's a thought. Miss Helen.
Why'd you keep the coffee?
Miss Helen.
Oh, why don't you call me Nellie, love? What is it?
Miss Nellie, do you issue the documents one needs to get a translation authorized?
Oh, goose. Vodka and a cigar. That's what I call living.
What a cigar.
I said, do you issue the documents one needs to get a translation authorized?
Why don't you get the water?
I'll get it.
What?
Do you issue the documents one needs to get a translation authorized?
Yeah, to anybody who hasn't recently received a memo.
And Daxi. Yes, Mr. Gross.
And Daxu Bell. Jock and Daxu Zeth. In order to make a translation from Ptidipi, you require an authorization from Dr. Kuntz.
Daxu Zeth.
Jitch Toot Zeth. Little?
Dr. Kuntz.
Good.
Gavitch et la Gorache, yes?
La Gorache, Sergeant.
In order to grant the authorization, you require the documents from Miss Helen.
La Gorache, Navarre. The Zora Bridel, Chef of Abagan.
Mabolig is Zora Abagan.
Miss Helen.
Abagan, Fanchfort. Yes, Mr. Gosh.
Fanchfort, Nourakad. In order to issue the documents, you require that a staff member have his memorandum translated.
Gorn?
Gnobebeans?
Igrakar?
Gnobebeans?
Igrakar? Gnobebeans?
What? I'm the deputy director, and I insist that you show me some respect. As I've just discovered, any staff member who has recently received a memorandum in Taidipi can only be granted a translation of Taidipi text after his memorandum has been translated. But what happens if the Taidipi text which he wishes translated is precisely that memorandum? It can't be done, because it hasn't yet been translated officially. In other words, the only way to learn what is in one's memo is to know it already. An extraordinary paradox when you come to think of it. Ladies and gentlemen, do you come to think of it? I ask you, what must an employee of our organization, whoever he may be, do in order to escape this vicious, vicious circle?
He must learn Patai Deepi, Mr. Gross.
Are you here?
Yes. We are.
Have you been here long?
Not long.
I didn't hear you come.
No, you didn't. We entered quietly.
Excuse me.
There are things, Mr. Gross, that cannot be excused. And when, at the very time in which the whole organization is conducting a courageous struggle for the introduction and the establishment of the TIDP, an official, referring to the activities of our employees, speaks with such malicious innuendo and mean irony about, I quote, a vicious, vicious circle, then it cannot be excused at all.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ballard, but the circumstance I've allowed myself to point out is simply a fact.
What of it? You don't expect us to fall on our knees when faced with facts?
I plead guilty. I acknowledge the entire extent of my guilt while fully realizing the consequences resulting from it. Furthermore, I wish to enlarge my confession by the following self-indictment. I issued an illegal order which led to the fraudulent authentication of my own personal copybook. By this action, I abused my authority. I did this in order to avert attention from the fact that I had appropriated a bank endorsement stamp improperly for my private use. I request for myself the most severe punishment.
I think that under these circumstances it is no longer possible for him to remain in our organization. What do you say, Mr. Kay? Certainly not. Come to my office tomorrow morning. We'll settle the formalities connected with your dismissal.
George, come out of there. You'll be my deputy. Let's go.
And so, the next morning, poor Mr. Gross appeared in his own former office to hear what fate had in store for him.
Good morning.
What do you want?
Mr. Balash, I was supposed to come to your office today concerning my dismissal from our organization.
I'm busy now. Come back later. In a while,
I'm sorry. Thank you. I'll come back later.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hannah?
Yes, Mr. Balash?
You know Patai Deepi, don't you?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Why not? I thought you'd been going to the Patai Deepi classes.
I used to, but I had to give them up. May I go and get the milk?
Why?
Well, the ink was too hard for me. May I go and get the milk?
Aren't you ashamed? The secretary to the managing director and Patai Deepi is too hard for her.
May I go and get the milk?
Run along.
Good morning.
You're here again.
You said, Mr. Ballas, that I should come back in a while.
By that, I didn't mean such a short while.
I'm sorry. I'll come later. Sorry.
Yes, Mr. Ballard?
Nothing.
Did you want something?
No, no, you may go.
Thank you.
Here I am. I've got the milk.
Is Pataideepi so difficult to learn?
It makes great demands on one's memory, Mr. Balash.
Others can learn it?
Very few can, Mr. Balash. Most of the staff have had to give it up.
Even when all give up, you should persevere.
But you also dropped out, Mr. Balash, after the first lesson.
That's different. I had to interrupt my studies for reasons of work. You think it's child's play to be at the helm of this colossus? And what's more, in these times, come and try it and you'd see.
But Pataideepi really makes great demands on people. Besides, they say it's based on doubtful principles. May I go and get the rolls?
Who says that?
Mr. Kupsch.
Surely not. Not Mr. Kupsch. And if by any chance he did say such a thing, it was just in fun. You do realize that, don't you? Tell me, who on the staff actually knows the Pataideepi?
Only the teacher and the personnel of the translation center. May I go and get the rolls? Well,
there you are. And then you tell me it's beyond human power to learn it.
May I go and get the rolls?
Run along.
Good morning.
You're here again?
You said, Mr. Balash, that I should come back in a while.
In a while? By that I didn't mean such a short while.
I'm sorry. I'll come later. Sorry.
Listen.
Yes, Mr. Balash?
Nothing.
Did you want something?
I just wanted to say that I seem to have overdone it a bit yesterday. You know, there were so many people about. I wasn't sure who might be among them. My nerves were a bit ruffled after all that happened. Oh,
thank you. You're very kind. Thank you. But the dismissal stands, doesn't it?
Dismissal? Well, for the moment, I don't think we need to take such drastic measures, do you? You can't be my deputy, of course.
Of course.
But there is an opening.
Is there? To do what?
The position of staff watcher has become free.
Do you think I could handle it?
Well, why don't you have a go at it for a trial period? We'll see how it works out.
Very kind of you, Mr. Ballish. When may I start?
At once, if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Ballish. Thank you very much.
Here I am. I've got the rolls.
Hannah, who else says that Pataideepi is based on doubtful principles?
All except you, Mr. Ballish.
Don't exaggerate.
Really?
And what else do they say?
But it's only a matter of time before you find it out, too.
You see, this is the reward for all one has done for them. Couldn't you at least make out what this is all about?
Well, it could be either a memorandum concerning the last inventory.
Certainly not.
Or a protest.
What sort of protest?
I don't know.
Why should it be a protest of all things?
It's been rumored that protests written in Pataideepi get preferential treatment.
Where did you hear all this?
Oh, in the dairy shop this morning.
If anybody has decided to lodge a protest, then I'm off to lunch.
You like it, Mr. Ballash? It's goulash today.
In the meanwhile, Mr. Gross has taken up his new post as staff watcher in the translation center.
Here are the onions, Miss Helen. Would you mind putting them by the filing cabinet? There's a good girl.
All right.
Maria? Maria? It suits you. Your new hat. Don't worry. It's only me, Gross.
Oh, but where are you?
I'm the staff watcher now.
You? Oh, no.
Yes. Mr. Ballash dropped my dismissal and he's letting me work here for a trial period.
You, staff watcher?
Very much so. And in the given circumstances, it really seems the best solution for me. I only wish I could get used to the lack of space.
Oh, goodness. And I've found a job for you.
Have you? What sort of job?
With a theatre group.
But I can't act.
Oh, you could always manage a bit part.
Yes, perhaps. But are you somehow connected with the theatre?
My brother works with this group.
You're kind. Maria?
Yes?
Isn't it odd? I have to look at you all the time.
Oh, Mr. Gross.
Maria, seems the gross has got limes. Would you mind running over and getting me eight?
Yes, Miss Helen.
Gross, are you there?
But of course, Mr. Balash.
Well, how goes it?
Very well, thank you.
Any strangers?
Three visitors in number 5.
Alone in the office?
One, for a moment.
Behaved?
Decently.
Very well, I think you're going to manage it. Anything else?
Sorry, but what else, precisely?
Well, for example, what sort of things are being said among the staff about the Thai DP?
I'm sorry, Mr. Balash, but how should I put it? I'm not a... You know what I mean.
I know, you still haven't shaken off the shackles of outdated prejudices. But you must understand that it's for a good cause. What's more, it is, in a certain sense, your moral duty. Is that quite clear?
Quite clear, Mr. Balash.
Oh, hello, Mr. Balash.
I say, Mashut, how goes the translating?
Very well, thank you.
Tell me, how many texts have you translated so far?
Into Ptai DP or from Ptai DP?
Well, let's say into Ptai DP. One.
I'm just working on the second one now.
So few?
That's not so few.
Pretty slow work, isn't it?
Yes, yes, indeed it is. You see, every expression has several variants in Ptai DP, and so one must consult the author of a submitted text regarding each separate word in order to find out precisely how it was meant and which of the Ptai DP variants to use. Am I not right, Alex?
Yes, quite right. Well, what you'll have to do is to speed up your translating. Hmm? The world won't come to an end if an occasional little word isn't exactly right.
I'm sorry, Mr. Balash. I have a meeting now.
Well, then, go along. Hey, Alex.
Yeah?
Just one more little thing. Tell me, how is the Thai DP actually making out? What about the results in other organizations?
Well, they're all right, I suppose. Except wherever Thai DP has started to be used more widely, it's automatically begun to assume some of the characteristics of a natural language. Various emotional overtones, imprecisions, ambiguities, and so on.
Did you say emotional overtones? But in that case, the Thai DP is losing its very purpose.
Yes, I might put it that way. I'm sorry, Mr. Balash. Do you mind if I go now? I'm afraid I have a meeting.
Well, then run along. Mr. Gross?
Yes, Mr. Balash?
I hope you aren't taking seriously what occurred yesterday. You do realize, don't you, it was just a bit of show for the sake of the others? Eh? Listen, why don't I call you Joe, shall I?
But of course, Mr. Balash, I'll be delighted.
I say, old boy, come out of there. You don't want to be doing that sort of work, you? I don't see why you shouldn't carry on as my deputy.
After what happened?
We must take some risk, damn it. I won't hear of your being abused this way, Joe. We're having some difficulties at present. The Thai DP isn't doing as well as it might be.
Yes, I've heard.
The way things are now, I simply need you here, Joe. So come out.
Here I am.
Why don't you sit down?
Thank you.
Oh, where's the enthusiasm we all felt when we were launching Ptai DP? I worked at it as stubbornly as a mule, you know, drank only water, ate only Purple Hearts, went without sleep, just worked and organized. When the cause was at stake, I knew no brother. Well, you remember, don't you?
I do remember.
That was the best time of my life. And now, see how it's all turned out. This isn't what we wanted, is it?
Well, perhaps things will mend themselves again somehow.
Listen, Joe. You and I, between us, we'll pull things together again. You have your experience. You know how things were done in the past when everything worked. I know how they ought to be done, so they'll work in the future. If we two work hand in hand, I'll bet you anything you like we'll hammer out something damn well astounding. Are you free tonight?
Yes.
Good. Now look, let's meet quietly at some pub. Have a glass of beer and really think things out.
But,
I'll go and fetch George. Tell him to march back into his cubicle. He's already proved himself in the job, and he must see that now, in the high positions, what we need above all is specialists.
Helen, are you there?
Mashut.
Oh, you're still here.
You still haven't told me about your translations from the Tidy P.
So far, I haven't translated anything from Tidy P.
Helen?
Alex?
Oh, you're still here.
Why not, Masha?
Up till now, nobody has brought me any authorization from Alex.
Alex, why do you refuse to authorize translations?
But I can't authorize them without personal registration documents. Oh, here you are.
Nellie?
Oh, you're here.
You mean, Alex, in all this time, nobody has brought you any documents from Nellie?
That's right.
Nellie, why do you refuse to issue those damn documents?
Oh, for heaven's sake, love, I can't issue them until I made sure they don't conflict with the decisions in the memos. And I can't learn the decisions because the blessed memos are written in Ptidipi. And as you bloody well know, I'm forbidden to make any translations whatsoever. Hasn't that girl brought my lines yet?
Well, why doesn't Otto translate the memos?
I can translate only after getting an authorization from Alex.
Then Alex will have to start granting the authorization.
But I can't if nobody has the documents from Nellie.
You hear that, Nellie? You'll have to start giving people the documents regardless.
But I'm not permitted to translate.
Why doesn't Otto do the translating?
I can translate only after getting an authorization from Alex.
Then Alex will have to start granting the authorization.
I can't when nobody has the documents from Nellie.
You hear that, Nellie? You'll have to start giving people the documents regardless.
But I'm not permitted to translate.
Why doesn't Otto do the translating?
I can translate only after getting an authorization from Alex.
Then Alex will have to start granting the authorization.
I can't when nobody has the documents from Nellie.
You hear that, Nellie? You'll have to start giving people the documents regardless.
I am not permitted to translate.
I'd like to know who thought up this vicious circle.
You did, Mr. Balash.
Well, what of it? The situation was entirely different at that time. Then it had profound significance. But we've progressed since then, and that's why I propose the following simplifications in the procedure of translating all Ptidi-P texts. These will come into effect at once. First, Helen is permitted to issue the personal registration documents without knowing the contents of the memos. Second, Alex is permitted to authorize all translations without the personal registration documents. Third, Otto is permitted to translate without an authorization from Alex. The fact we can afford these measures is one more eloquent proof of the rightness of our way.
An hour later, Maria was very surprised to see Mr. Gross enter her office.
Mr. Gross, do you realize what would happen to you if anybody saw you here?
I'm no longer the staff watcher.
Oh, what happened?
Mr. Balash has made me his deputy again.
Oh, congratulations.
Good gracious, what for? Frankly, I'd rather remain the staff watcher.
I know. You'll have to cope with some pretty nasty bits of business now, I expect.
Never mind. Well, Maria, have a good time here, and do come and see me in my office one day.
Mr. Gross?
Yes?
Has anybody translated for you that, you know, the thing you wanted to have translated yesterday?
The memorandum? No. And according to current regulations, nobody can. After all, it's probably better that way.
Why do you think it's a negative one?
I've learned always to expect the worst.
Was any irregularity found during the inventory in your department?
Not that I know of. I did have the rubber stamp at home just then, but I took it home for reasons of work, and not, as some people seem to suggest, for my children to play with. My little Martin might have played with it at most twice in all that time.
Mr. Gross, if your conscience is clear, you've nothing to fear. Your innocence will be proved, but you have to fight for it. I believe that if one doesn't give way, truth must always come out in the end.
What do you know about the world, dear child? Still, I wish you could always stay like this. You're right. One really ought always to stand firm. The trouble is, I've never been very firm. More of an intellectual, always hesitant, always full of doubts. Too considerate, a dreamer, rather than a man of action. And that's my bad luck. But I believe that now I can at least face all this frankly, without hysteria and without self-pity. That I managed to recover from all the upheavals, that I'm still able to forget the past and make a quite new and quite different beginning.
Mr. Gross, have you the memo with you?
You mean? Surely you wouldn't.
I'm quite grown up, thank you, Mr. Gross. I know what I'm doing. Give it to me.
Oh.
Dear sir, the last inventory in your department has shown that the allegation of a repeated appropriation of the bank endorsement stamp for improper use is in your case entirely unfounded. On the contrary, we feel obliged to emphasize the very positive findings of the inventory, which clearly prove that you have been conscientious and responsible in the directing of your organization, and that you therefore merit full confidence. This is further confirmed by your standard regard for PTIDP, which has been quite unequivocal from the beginning. Our view of the PTIDP campaign has always been entirely negative, for we understand it to be a profoundly harmful attempt to place office communications on a confused, unrealistic, anti-human basis. We suggest that you liquidate with the greatest possible resolution and speed any attempt to introduce PTIDP into your organization, and that you severely punish all those who have been propagating PTIDP for their own personal advantage and in disregard of the consequences. Wishing you all success in your further work, we remain yours faithfully, signature illegible.
Thank you, Maria. Now at least I have an opportunity to prove that I have more civil courage than I've shown so far. I promise you that this time I shall not give way to anything or anybody, even at the risk of my position.
Mr. Gross, I like you.
First, I must deserve your sympathy. Dear child.
Maria, that was a stupid thing to do.
Oh, God, are you there?
I came back a moment ago, and I'm not sorry I did. I hope you realize why.
I'm afraid I do.
Mr. Ballast, your era is over. My memorandum has just been translated to me, and its contents make perfectly clear that I'm not only quite innocent as regards the rubber stamp, but above all, that I'm the only legitimate director of this organization. Furthermore, I'm requested by this memorandum to make an end of PTIDP with the greatest possible resolution and speed.
Hello.
Yes, Mr. Barrett?
Isn't it time for you to get your chocolates?
Oh, yes, it is.
Well, then run along. Oh, and while you're there, get me some fags, please.
Yes, Mr. Barrett.
Sorry, what did you say?
Furthermore, I'm requested by this memorandum to make an end of PTIDP with the greatest possible resolution and speed, and to punish severely all those who were engaged in innocent production for their own advantage. In other words, history has proved me right, and I, on the basis of the authority, which is rightfully mine...
What did you say?
In other words, history has proved me right, and I, on the basis of the authority, which is rightfully mine, shall draw due consequences from what has occurred. The way in which you seize the entire organization and force PTIDP on it cries for vengeance. I'm a humanist. And my concept...
Here are your cigarettes, Mr. Ballash.
Thanks, Hannah. What did you say?
I'm a humanist. And my concept of directing this organization derives from the idea that every single member of the staff is human and must become more and more human. I place the struggle for the victory of reason and of moral values above a peace bought by their loss. And I will carry on to the bitter end the struggle against all the misdeeds you have committed here. I think that under these circumstances, it is no longer possible for you to remain in our organization. Kindly move out of my desk.
Have a fag.
I said, kindly move out of my desk.
You have one, old boy.
Move out of my desk!
Let's say after lunch. All right.
I'm glad you aren't putting up any resistance. After lunch, we'll be all right.
I don't see why I should put up any resistance, do you?
Do you mean that you agree with it?
But of course.
Good gracious. How so?
I've seen the light.
Have you?
Absolutely. I've come to the conclusion that the PTIDP is really for the birds.
Are you being sincere? You ought not to be so calm about it. It's very confusing.
I'm calm because you're severe, but just words express what I've been tragically feeling for a long time. And so they fill me with relief that I won't be obliged to continue any longer work which I don't believe in. And that finally, all my mistakes will be put right. I wish you all the luck in your liquidation of the disastrous consequences of PTIDP, and I firmly trust that your work will succeed at least as much as mine has failed. I'll try to help you to the limits of my humble ability. Do have a cigarette.
No, thanks. You seem to have come to your senses.
I have.
Perhaps you were indeed sincerely mistaken.
I was.
How do you mean you'll help me?
I'm quite sure you don't want a fag.
Thanks, not now. How do you mean you'll help me?
But they're superb.
I'm sure they are. How do you mean you'll help me?
Look, old boy, if you don't take one, I'll be hurt.
Oh.
No? Well, as your deputy, of course.
You must have misunderstood me. I said you'll leave the organization.
You wouldn't want to take such drastic measures, would you?
I'm sorry, but I've made up my mind not to give way this time. I don't propose to repeat my old mistakes.
Come, come. Didn't I let you stay on as my deputy?
That was different. Rightfully, I should have remained the director, and truth was on my side.
I know that too now.
I've known it from the beginning.
It's always easy to be against a thing from the beginning. What is much harder is to be for a thing, even at the risk of getting your teeth kicked in.
That doesn't change one iota the fact that you are the chief culprit, and so you must get the severest punishment. You simply have to pack up and get out.
And if I don't?
You will.
Goodness gracious, take it easy, old boy. Recognize this. It's the supplementary order for the introduction of the Tidy P. And if I'm not mistaken, it's signed by you, not by me.
Oh.
Or were you not the managing director at that time? And in that case, who is the chief culprit? Well?
That one signature is insignificant. It's nothing in comparison with what you've committed.
Trouble is, history knows only such signatures.
Besides, it was you who got me to sign it.
I did? I don't seem to remember.
By your trick about the authentication of the copybook.
I wouldn't bring that up if I were you.
Why not?
Because it's no extenuating circumstance at all. Quite the reverse, in fact.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't you? Well, look here, old boy. If it weren't for the affair of the copybook, you might have claimed that you signed the order moved by a sincere belief in your principles, which, of course, wouldn't have excused your conduct, but would at least have explained it somewhat on humanitarian grounds. While if you do bring up this motive now, you'll be admitting thereby that you signed the order moved merely by petty cowardice, so as to avoid a piddling punishment for the authentication you didn't hesitate to plunge the whole organization into the jaws of the present catastrophe. Do you follow me? Now look, if on the other hand you hadn't signed the order, you might have pretended that you hadn't quite realized the impropriety of your action regarding the copybook, but your signature proves that you were clearly aware of this and that you panicked because you were afraid of being punished. As you see, both your errors are intertwined in such an original way that the one greatly multiplies the other. Well then, shall we come to an agreement?
All right. Let's both resign.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't see why I should.
And you would really, sincerely, help me in everything?
I'm glad our discussion is at last reaching a realistic level. Of course I would.
You have a great deal of experience. You can work as stubbornly as a mule. Would you also work like a mule against the IDP?
I can't do things any other way.
But somebody has to get the axe. You know people.
Leave that to me.
Ready, Mr. Kay? Hello, Mr. Gross.
Hello, Mr. Gross.
Hello, Mr. Gross.
You may begin to read your statement.
The delegation, which, under the leadership of Mr. Kubsch, now comes to you, consists of people who, until the very last, sincerely believed in PTIDP and were in the vanguard of its introduction. All the more difficult it is, therefore, for us, your loyal colleagues, to approach you now as a delegation whose mission it is to warn you against the consequences of any further propagation of PTIDP.
Dear friends, I know only too well, perhaps even better than you, how desperate is the situation we've reached with PTIDP. And I assure you that it has cost me many a sleepless night. As your former managing director, I also accept the greatest share of the blame. In accordance with directives from the authorities, I have taken certain first steps with which I shall now acquaint you, because they are already specifically aimed towards a bold solution of the very problem which you have now come here to point out to me. First of all, I've resigned as your managing director, and I've passed this position to the man who, as you'll surely agree, is the best qualified for it. Mr. Joseph Gross. Mr. Gross, who, throughout the era of PTIDP, remained loyal to and even suffered for his convictions. I myself have received with gratitude from the hands of Mr. Gross the position of his deputy. I've received it in order, above all, to have an opportunity to show by diligent work my willingness to serve the new cause, and thus to repair all the harm which, with the best intentions, I committed. And now let me give the platform to Mr. Gross.
What can I add? I'm not angry with you. I know that you meant well. The proof of it is also this, your delegation, which comes to me in the name of reason and of moral values. Well, we should let bygones be bygones. Let us lose no more words over it. What is at stake now is the future.
We are sorry, but we cannot be satisfied with such a brief explanation. We threw our whole lives into the fight for the wrong thing, and we want to know who was responsible and who took advantage of it. We were deceived, and we have the right to know who has deceived us.
Sir Balash, will you answer this point?
Yes. Friends, we are all guilty.
That's only a hollow phrase.
We want to know the actual person.
The names.
All right, then. I'll tell you. You've all surely noticed that for some time now there has been prowling about our offices a mysterious, silent man whose real function in our organization has never been known to us. I myself have come to know this man very well because I've been under his direct and constant surveillance. Inexhaustible was the well of methods by which he has been forcing us to do things we disagreed with. He pried into every nook and cranny, was always present, always subtly disguised in the cloak of inconspicuousness and of silent participation. And it is no accident that this grey eminence of Patidi P, so diligently trying never to be publicly compromised in any way, has penetrated today, when the cause he served with such sycophancy is quite lost, to the head of your delegation, abusing your honest trust and averting from himself all suspicion by assuming the mask of a critical attitude towards Patidi P. And this man is none other. Thank you, Mr. K. Yes? What have you to say for yourself?
Good God, he's actually going to say something.
My death to all artificial languages! Long live natural human speech! Long live man!
There he goes. Come in.
Ah, oh, there you are. This is Mr. Spook, my new assistant. Welcome, Mr. S. Come in.
I see.
Now then, let me conclude. What is at stake is the future. I appeal to you to put all your best efforts into the struggle for the re-establishment of natural human language, of our beloved mother tongue.
Wait a minute, Joe. Our colleagues are surely tired by now. We can talk tomorrow. We can talk tomorrow about what happens next. Now, let me suggest that we all go and have lunch together.
Now, that's what I call an idea.
Oh, good.
Hurrah to the goulash march.
Assembly in a quarter of an hour at the translation center. Well, that's that. Are you quite comfortable, Mr. S?
Things do seem to be moving rather fast.
Mr. Gross.
But there was nothing else I could do. An open conflict would have meant that I'd be finished. This way, as the managing director, I can at least salvage this and that.
Mr. Gross.
Anyway, who knows, maybe this Balash will turn out to be quite a good man after all, if I use him in the right place.
Mr. Gross.
What is it?
May I go and get my lunch?
Run along. Why can't I be a little boy again? I'd do everything differently from the beginning.
So Mr. Gross was back in office, and all seemed in perfect order. Yet, on the very next day, as he passed through the corridor, he heard a familiar voice coming from the lecture room.
Basic mistake of Tidy P was its uncritical overestimation of the significance of redundancy. In the pursuit of maximum redundancy, some eager clerks inserted within Tidy P words, already long enough, thank you, even further so-called empty texts. thus blindly increasing the percentage of redundancy, so that the length of inter-office communications grew out of all proportion and sense. Now, let me give you an example. I've heard of a case where a brief summons to military HQ filled 36 typed pages. Single space. All these mistakes have served as a sound lesson in the creation of the new synthetic language, Korukor, which no longer attempts to limit the unreliability of a text by a strenuous pursuit of words as dissimilar from each other as possible. On the contrary, it achieves this by a purposeful exploitation and organization of their similarity. The more similar the words, the closer their meaning, so that a possible error in the text represents only a slight deviation from its sense. Now, this method has many advantages, among them the fact that Korukor is very easy to learn. Often, it is enough to know only one word from within a certain radius of meaning in order to guess many other words of that group. We can do that unaided and without any further study.
Please, sir.
Yes?
Would you please demonstrate this to us with an example?
Certainly. Monday becomes, in Korukor, Ilopaga. Tuesday, Ilopaga. Wednesday, Ilopagur. Thursday, Ilopagia. Friday, Ilopagur. Saturday, Ilopagur. Now, what do you think Sunday is? Well, Mr. Callas?
Ilopago.
Correct, Mr. Callas. You get an A. It's easy, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
You see? And at the same time, the danger of an error can be entirely disregarded. For example, if a typist makes a mistake and instead of Ilopagur writes in the announcement of a meeting Ilopagur, the subject of the meeting is not at all distorted thereby. The most that can happen is that the staff will meet already on Tuesday instead of on Friday, and the matter under consideration will thus even be expedited.
Mr. Barrett.
Yes?
What on earth did it mean?
What?
Another artificial language is being taught here.
Korukor.
But we agreed, didn't we, that office communications are again to be conducted in our mother tongue?
I don't recall we agreed on anything of the sort.
But my memorandum states quite clearly...
As far as I remember, it states nothing about what language is now to be used here. Making an end of Ptidipi doesn't mean that we must automatically give up all attempts at finally introducing some precision and order into office communications. If we did, we would, so to speak, throw out the baby with the bathwater. Am I not right, Mr. S.?
Hmm? Yeah. But I understood...
You understood wrong. It is evident that you've lived for a long time in an isolation which tragically marked you through the loss of a living contact with reality. I don't want to meddle in the business of the managing director, but when I see that you're clearly fumbling and could easily come into conflict with the opinion of most of our staff, then I'm sorry, but I have to interfere.
Look... Wouldn't it make things easier if you carried on as the managing director and I as your deputy?
Not on your life. I've been foolish enough to try that once already, and I don't propose to do it again. Let's each do what suits him best. I have certain organizational talents which I can put to excellent use as your deputy, while you can better bear the weight of responsibility connected with the position of the managing director. My God, Mr. S., they're still at it over there. Let's go.
Maria.
Joseph.
What's the matter?
You didn't tell me the watcher had come back.
Well?
He saw and heard everything.
Everything? What?
That I translated your memo.
Well?
He told on me and I was fired on the spot. Because I translated Tidypi text before...
Tidypi has been cancelled.
Mr. That's beside the point. A rule is a rule, he said. What guarantee is there, he said, that I wouldn't someday make an improper translation from Korukor as well? He said he'd promised you to work like a mule, and he didn't want to break his promise the very first day by compromising.
What are you going to do?
Well, I hate to bother you, but couldn't you perhaps cancel his decision? Or perhaps at least put in a kind word for me?
Dear Maria,
We are living in a strange, complex epoch. As Hamlet says, our time is out of joint. Just think. We're reaching for the moon, and yet it's increasingly hard for us to reach ourselves. We're able to split the atom, but unable to prevent the splitting of our personality. Never before has man lived projected so near to the very brink of the insoluble conflict between the subjective will of his moral self and the objective possibility of its ethical realization. Manipulated, automatized, made into a fetish, man loses the experience of his own totality. Horrified, he stares as a stranger at himself, unable not to be what he is not, nor to be what he is. Dear Maria, you can't begin to guess how happy I would be if I could do for you what you just asked me to do. The more am I frightened, therefore, that in reality I can do next to nothing for you, because I am, in fact, totally alienated from myself. The desire to help you faithfully encounters within me the responsibility thrust upon me, who am attempting to salvage the last remains of man's humanity by the permanent menace to our organization from the side of Mr. Balash and his men. A responsibility so binding that I absolutely may not risk the loss of the position on which it is based by any open conflict with Mr. Balash and his men. Besides, there is no point in further complicating my already complicated situation by taking too tragic a view of your prospects. Let's try to be quite matter-of-fact about it, shall we? You're still very young. You have your whole life in front of you. You have lost nothing so far. Just think. How many people today are able to say with any degree of honesty that they have a brother with a theater group? A minuscule minority. For all we can tell, one day you might come to be thankful to Mr. Balash for a career as a famous actress. What matters now is that you must not lose your hope, your love of life, and your trust in people. Chin up, my fellow. Keep smiling. I know it's absurd, dear Maria, but I must go now and have my lunch. So, goodbye. Be good.
Nobody ever talked to me so nicely before.
The Memorandum by Václav Havel was translated by Vera Blackwell and adapted for radio by Martin Eslin. Donald Pleasance played the part of Jan Balash and Hugh Burden, Joseph Gross. Kups was played by Jeffrey Matthews, Hannah Beth Boyd, the Professor of the Tidp, John Moffat, Callas, Anthony Hall, Otto Maschert, Michael Deacon.